The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Obstetrics and palliative care services, and Dr. Leahy is the medical administrator of Ocean View Family Practice, mentors international medical graduates, and is involved in a palliative care project. And whereas Dr. Sheila Leahy, a former president of the College of Physicians and Surgeons, has served with Doctors Nova Scotia for 24 years, has held a variety of positions with the Southwest Nova District Health, and has participated on the Board of Cancer Care Nova Scotia and the Reproductive Care Advisory Committee. And whereas Dr. Sheila Leahy's many contributions, dedication, and leadership were recently recognized by the Nova Scotia College of Family Physicians when they named her the Nova Scotia Family Physician of the Year for 2011. Therefore, be it resolved, the members of this House of Assembly recognize Dr. Sheila Leahy for the many years of dedication, compassion, and medical care she has given to the people of Yarmouth, and congratulate her on being named the Nova Scotia Family Physician of the Year for 2011. I'd also like to personally thank her for the many years she served as my family physician. Mr. Speaker, I ask for waiver of notice and passage without debate.
There has been a request for waiver. Is it agreed? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those against say nay. Motion is carried. As we begin oral questions put by members to ministers, I remind all honorable members that the use of BlackBerry's laptops and any other electrical devices is not permitted during question period. So they are to remain off during that period. Also, I would like to remind all honorable members who are recognized by the chair that they must direct all comments and questions through the chair. I will now recognize the Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition. The time is 3:21, and we will continue until 4:21. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday, we learned that NewPage, Ohio, has filed a notice of motion to investigate the $25 million it transferred to NewPage, Port Hawkesbury. The Official Creditors Committee representing NewPage, Ohio, claims that the NewPage Port Hawkesbury owes the parent company $45 million and is questioning the $25 million that was transferred here to our operation. So my question to the Premier, can the Premier tell us what government has done to intervene on NewPage Port Hawkesbury's behalf to ensure that that money remains here for the benefit of the workers and Nova Scotia companies owed money?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The government has been involved in the process right from day one. In fact, that fund was something that we worked with the company on to ensure was in place in order to provide for some comfort and some payment to those creditors. Of course, in addition to that, we've also done a number of other things, but we continue to work through the court process in order to see to it that, to the extent that it's possible, we protect the interests of the contractors and, of course, the mill workers there at NewPage.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier was that NewPage, Ohio, is now questioning that transfer and that very fund, and it's our hope and the hope of, I'm sure, not only Port Hawkesbury but Nova Scotia, that government intervenes to ensure that that money remains here in Nova Scotia. This mill holds the surrounding communities together and is worth millions in economic development, Mr. Speaker. And we know that the Minister of Natural Resources or some of his staff have met with some potential buyers. So my question to the Premier, what discussion has government had with prospective buyers, and what plan does government have should the new buyer seek government funding?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I think all members of the House would know, I was in Port Hawkesbury. I announced the seven-point plan that was designed to keep that facility, that plant, in an operating condition so that a new buyer would be able to come in and to bring it back online. So in some senses, that, of course, is already an investment by government in ensuring that a new buyer has an asset that they're able to operate. Mr. Speaker, again, throughout the process, what we're attempting to do is to ensure that the asset is there so that there are as many competitive bids as possible, meaning that there will be not a case where simply you're stuck with one perhaps undesirable situation. So, of course, we're going to consider there are things that have to take place, things like the transfers of licenses and those sorts of things. We're going to consider all of them. We're working with the monitor who is in place under the Creditor Protection Act. And, we, like everyone else, are doing everything that we can to ensure that that mill remains an operating mill for not just the Strait area. And many people would know that the impact of that closure would actually ripple pretty much right across the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The seven-point plan the Premier speaks of stated in that plan that the stockpile would be used as fuel for the bio-cogen facility. Mr. Speaker, that stockpile is losing value every day as it's rotting there. Mr. Speaker, the New Pageport Hawkesbury is seeking permission to sell that stockpile wood before it loses even more value, and contribute the money from the sale to the underfunded Woodsman's Reserve Fund. So my question to the Premier, does the Premier support the efforts of New Pageport Hawkesbury to aid the Reserve Fund, or does he stand by his position that stockpiled fibre should be used by Nova Scotia Power in its biomass facility?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the Leader of Opposition is confusing wood that was cut and either piled at the roadway or brought into the plant that was there, and our commitment to ensure that there would be a stockpile for eventual use in the biomass project. Now, the biomass project requires to have dried wood, so it needs wood that has been out and able to and cured, whereas wood that is being used in the mill is actually greener. So there are two different stockpiles, Mr. Speaker. As far as the ones that he's talking about, those are ones that are being claimed by the company. What I would support, of course, is that the value of that wood go into the fund so that it can be distributed through the contractors.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. Last fall, the Premier's government set up a Labour Management Review Committee, ramming through Bill 100 to create this committee. The Chronicle Herald at the time called it a model of bad democracy that is also pretty much guaranteed to produce out-of-touch advice, and I will table that quote for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, the Premier assured worried Nova Scotians that the committee would only deal with issues of unionized workplaces. And yet his government has told that committee that its first item of business should be to set up first contract arbitration for Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, first contract arbitration is a job killer for our province. And so says the legal opinion of McGinnis Cooper, one of our leading law firms, who say such legislated arbitration can have serious implications for employers, and I will also table that. My question for the Premier, Mr. Speaker, why was he so silent on his true plans during Bill 100, but is now plowing ahead with this new thing, first contract arbitration?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, first of all, this is before the MLRC. The very purpose of it was to have the ability to be able to have open and frank conversations about labour relations matters. That's what it's doing. I understand they had a study day with respect to first contract. 80% of the workers in Canada are already covered by first contract legislation right across the country. 15% of the workers here in Nova Scotia are already covered by first contract legislation, Mr. Speaker. So I understand this is an opportunity for the Leader of the Conservative Party to pontificate about labour relations, but really, Mr. Speaker, it's much to do about nothing.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when it comes to pontificating, no one in this province can hold a candle to the Premier over there, first of all. The fact of the matter is, Mr. Speaker, that over the past 20 years, Nova Scotia has had the lowest rate of time lost due to strikes and work losses and work stoppages. In fact, in 2010, Nova Scotia lost exactly 0 days to strikes or work losses, according to Human Resources and Social Development Canada. True.
Order.
They applaud, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. Order. Order. Order, order, please. Order. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition, the Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. According to Human Resources and Social Development Canada, there is no problem here. We've all enjoyed the benefits of collective bargaining and labour management peace, one of the key conditions to having a growing economy and creating real sustainable jobs. Since there is no problem, my question to the Premier is this. If it isn't broken, why meddle with it now?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, my recollection is the last major strike I can remember is, of course, when the member opposite was the Chief of Staff for the Premier. And, of course, Mr. Speaker, that was how much they valued collective bargaining, Mr. Speaker. They brought in bills to take away collective bargaining rights. That's what I recall. Mr. Speaker, one of the reasons we set up the Labour Management Review Committee was, in fact, to ensure that there was a forum for the discussion of labour relations matters. I'm pleased to see that that's happening. And I'd just like to go back to correct something that the Leader of the Conservative Party said. Of course, what is being discussed in terms of contract arbitration is, of course, only applies to unionised workplaces, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I know the Premier likes to debate things that may or may not have happened in early 2000, but he should check his facts because he's factually incorrect in the way he started his answer. But what is factual, Mr. Speaker, is that the Premier made no mention of first contract arbitration when he was running to be Premier, nor did he talk about it when he was ramming through Bill 100. He said nothing about first contract arbitration when he met with the worried small business owners of our province who came to this House during the debate on Bill 100. The fact of the matter is Nova Scotia doesn't need it. There is no problem here, nor does Nova Scotia want it. But the Minister of Labour in his government does say, and I quote, it is a long-standing aim of the labour movement in her own discussion paper. And so now we know the reason why, Mr. Speaker. And so my question to the Premier is this. Will he be a Premier for all Nova Scotia and scrap this plan now, or is he only going to be a Premier of his own special interests?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I just want to confirm for the member opposite that I am the Premier for all Nova Scotians. I intend to act in the best interests of all Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. And, Mr. Speaker, consistently through election campaign after election campaign, we talked about the Labour Management Relations Committee. We said it was a good idea. We said we didn't want to see what had happened in the past where legislation was just introduced without any consultation, without any vehicle for study. Mr. Speaker, we talked about that because we thought it was the best way to proceed for Nova Scotians, and we still believe it's the best way, and we look forward to receiving the report of the LMRC.
The Honourable Member for Clare.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is about chip sealing roads. We know that the Department of Transportation decided to get back in the business of chip sealing roads in Nova Scotia this year. The department initially had planned to do over 350 kilometres of chip sealing this year. We found out last week, Mr. Speaker, that the department only did about 36 kilometres of chip sealing. Furthermore, I understand the road that the Minister of Agriculture lives on was one of the very few roads that the government chip sealed this year, Mr. Speaker. So my question to the Minister of Agriculture is, did the minister use his political influence at the cabinet table to have his own road chip sealed?
The Honourable Minister of Agriculture.
Not within my department portfolio, Mr. Speaker.
Okay. The Honourable Member for Clare on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians across this province are driving on thousands of kilometres of road badly in need of repair and maintenance. Yet, what we're seeing is a minister whose road was not on the original list get special treatment from this government. So my question again to the minister, was government paving and chip sealing schemes devised to pave the roads of cabinet ministers?
The Minister of Transportation, Infrastructure, Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to take the opportunity to table the five-year road plan for 2011-2012. I'd like to direct the member's attention to page 11, where it's listed that 4.7 kilometers of the Grand Lake Road are scheduled for chip sealing.
The Honourable Member for Clare on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Agriculture indicated today that he wanted the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal to not chip seal his road, but to pave it. Mr. Speaker, this is consistent with what the former NDP President in Truro Bible Hill stated, that party executive asked for a list of roads that voted NDP so they could be paved first. So my question to the Minister is this. Are the roads in this province being paved by merit or by political influence?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation, Infrastructure, Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members of this House are aware of the fact that on many occasions they come to my office and we talk about their priorities. I want those priorities to be clear and I want them to be public. Therefore, we were put forward in a five-year road plan. The concern of the past is not what we're dealing about. We're dealing about the present and how business is about to be done. I decided I don't have the time at this time to go through the history lesson of why we have become involved with the five-year road plan and how we wanted to make it public. But I want all members of this House to ensure that when you looked at the five-year road plan, you saw what was listed there, you brought your concerns to my attention, and that is going to continue. The Grand Lake Road is to be double chip sealed from the get-go, and that was the final decision. In fact, the work has been completed. The barbecue has been held by the local people for the road crew, and it's been very well received.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Advanced Education and Labour. I'm proud that Nova Scotia has a strong labour legislation. We have good labour relations here with few work stoppages. Mr. Speaker, the Department of Labour's conciliation services have a 95% success rate. That's why Nova Scotians were surprised to hear about the potential introduction of first contract arbitration. So my question to the Minister is, since we have good labour relations in this province, what problem is government trying to fix with first contract arbitration?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I know that my colleagues in the chamber share the government's goal of enhancing labour relations within this province. And certainly our interest in looking at a possible Nova Scotia model for first contract should be no surprise. The NDP labour critic back in 2006 actually introduced a bill into this chamber on first contract. We're only one of four provinces who don't have first contract. It's only natural that when we see the rest of the country moving in that direction that we should ask our Labour Management Review Committee to take a look at it, and that's exactly what's happened. Thank you.
The Honorable Leader of the Official Opposition on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm wondering if the Minister would clarify in her next instance, did she direct the committee to look at contract arbitration, or did they actually make the recommendation to the department? Because it was always under the understanding that it was Labor Relations Committee that was making this recommendation to the minister, not the minister asking Labor Relations to look at it. I think it's an important clarification because in the public it's being addressed as if this standalone committee is out there doing work and looking at issues that are affecting the labor workforce. And I think, Minister, in your answer you said that you would ask them to look at it. Could you please clarify that?
The Honourable Minister of Labor and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Labor Management Review Committee is one of a dozen or a couple of dozen advisory committees that report to me. And I have asked them to look at this issue. I'm looking for research analysis and a group to coordinate the consultation on this. They have undertaken it in a very thoughtful way. They had their study day, to which they invited representatives not only of unionized workplaces and employers, but also non-unionized workplaces and employers. And they put out a discussion paper. That consultation finishes this Friday, and they're going to be meeting next week to analyze the results. And I look forward to hearing their summary of the consultation. So I sent a letter to the co-chairs asking them to look into the issue of first contract and what it might look like in this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on his final supplementary.
Speaker, on October 28th, at the Nova Scotia Federation of Labour Convention, delegates said that the passage of first contract arbitration was their payday, Mr. Speaker, for campaign work done by labour organizations to get NDP members elected. I'm sure the minister remembers that question being asked to her. So, Mr. Speaker, last session we saw Bill 100. This session maybe we'll be dealing with first contract arbitration. Can the government tell us what other payback legislation may be coming?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, any proposed legislation, any legislation that's introduced, any policy changes in this province are always done in the best interests of all Nova Scotians. We have a fairly stable labour relations, and we acknowledge that, and it takes cooperation on the part of both unionized and non-unionized employers and employees. But certainly, first contract legislation could possibly put another tool in the toolkit in terms of enhancing stability in this province to make sure that in those rare occasions when collective bargaining process does not result in an easily achieved first contract, that there are other methods to help both the employer and the union to reach agreement. And this will enable workers to continue to take wages home to their families and make sure there's no disruption of work and productivity in this province. So looking at this makes sense. It's the sign of a responsible government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Under his leadership, the five-year plan for paving is supposed to get politics out of paving, and I'll table his very words, Mr. Speaker. Does the Premier agree that his plan must be transparent so Nova Scotians can trust it and trust his government is doing the right thing?
Honourable the Premier.
I do, and it is.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A key part of transparency is accuracy, Mr. Speaker. In the Premier's five-year paving plan, the government said it would pave a 4.7-kilometre stretch of the Grand Lake Road. Sounds innocent enough, Mr. Speaker. However, it turns out that the Grand Lake Road is what the municipality of East Hants calls an alias for the Mont Vista Road. And I'll table that information as well, Mr. Speaker. The very same road about which the Minister of Service Nova Scotia, Municipal Relations, was embroiled in controversy some 3 years ago. My question for the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is very simple. Does he agree that it is not appropriate to be sneaky and use a name which is an alias and not the common name for a road to avoid questions about whether the government is trying to hide a project from Nova Scotians?
The Honourable the Premier.
Now, Mr. Speaker, what I think is sad is that a member of the legislature would come here and ask a question which imputes that kind of motive to a member, another member of another party in this legislature. I think that's truly sad. Mr. Speaker, as I understand it, the Monte Vista Road turns into the Renfrew Road at some point in time, goes down into Grand Lake. They actually switch from one part of the road to the other. Mr. Speaker, this road, and in fact, people who have been out to the minister's house before will know that the paving already goes past his front gate. And the people on that road for years have argued for it to be paved or chip sealed. They've come to the house, they've talked about the engineering standards, they've talked about the school buses that have had trouble getting up and down that road, Mr. Speaker, and that road was neglected for years by the Conservatives. And finally, Mr. Speaker, it's been double chip sealed according to the plan that we put, but not only before the legislature, but before the people of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's not about the work getting done, it's how it got done. Mr. Speaker, so sneaky were the NDP that not only did they use an alias for the Monte Vista Road, it isn't even 4.7 kilometres long. No, Mr. Speaker, only by measuring that road at 3.5 kilometres and doing the math can a Nova Scotia find out that the NDP hid an extra 1.2 kilometres of paving on the unnamed road. Guess which road, Mr. Speaker? I asked the Premier, Mr. Speaker, if the NDP government wants to do paving fairly, does the Premier agree that it must use accurate information and not use both a sneaky alias for a controversial road and sneak in an extra road, one that just happens to be in front of his Cabinet Minister's colleagues?
The Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I just repeat what I said. The people who were on that road, as they are on many roads in this province, expect that the province will take the responsibility to ensure that the road is appropriately paved. In this case, Mr. Speaker, we put it in the five-year paving plan for exactly the reason that we intended to take the political lobbying out of it. And I don't know, over the last couple of years, how many members of the opposition have come to see the minister about paving their roads, but it's been lots of them, Mr. Speaker. And they've approached me about roads, Mr. Speaker, because that is the job of the MLAs. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, Mr. Speaker, but I'm saying what the minister does is they determine the priorities based on engineering standards. They do it on the basis of the economic use for that particular road, Mr. Speaker. They consider a lot of things, Mr. Speaker. This is a fair, transparent, open process for road paving in this province, something that never, ever happened when the Conservatives were in power.
Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in true NDP fashion, in a mid-Friday afternoon flurry, the public was informed by that next year's DHA budgets would be reduced by 3%. Mr. Speaker, we learned from last year's experience a freeze in DHA health care budgets is a cut. Lessons learned from last year can lead all of us to the conclusion that a 3% cut will be much more than 3%. Cost of living is running at 3.4%. A contract reveals today a one-year increase of 3.4%. I question the Minister of Health and Wellness. Why does the Minister continue to downplay the cuts by saying it will only be $46 million when she knows full well DHAs will have to deal with a dollar amount far greater than that?
The Honourable Member of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. Mr. Speaker, by my calculation, 3% of $1.6 billion is in fact $45.5 million. And I would say to the Honourable Member, do the math. It's fairly straightforward, and I have a calculator if he needs one.
The The Honourable Member for Kings West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, when in opposition, the NDP would be the first to scream and yell about any mention of cuts to health care, not to mention $46 million. Now, when the people of Nova Scotia are facing the health care cuts, it will be more in the tune of about $80 million. The minister downplays the fallout to patients and is telling everyone everything will be okay. Mr. Speaker, for the IWK, a 5% cut is $9.3 million. That's $9.3 million less for programs for children, women, and families. According to the CEO of the IWK, cuts of this magnitude will result in the closure of outpatient clinics. For Capital District, that same 5% cut represents a reduction of $33.6 million. My question to the minister, will the Minister of Health and Wellness stand before this House, guarantee Nova Scotians that a reduction of $80 million in DHA budgets will not impact patient care?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, in the past 10 years, the IWK budget has gone from $89 million to $189 million. This rate of growth, for example, in that one facility is simply not sustainable. We can do things better. And Mr. Speaker, we are doing things better. We're making strategic investments in healthcare. We're seeing expansion of many services for Nova Scotians around the province. And Mr. Speaker, I remind the members across the way that the last time they were in government, the health authorities in this province were running a $240 million deficit. This government will not permit our health care system to be jeopardized by doing the kind of thing that that party did when they were in government, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And how about those Maple Leafs?
Skirt. Wrong order. It's the Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Mr. Speaker, it's a shame that the NDP government plan uses an alias and sneaks an extra road in by using an inflated distance. But sadly, there's more. I am sorry to say that the NDP also tried to hide their political paving by telling Nova Scotians in their five-year paving plan that this project, this paving fiasco, was from the Renfrew Road to the end of the Grand Lake Road. No reasonable person reading the plan would think they were paving the Renfrew Road. So my question to the Premier about his leadership, Mr. Speaker, how does the Cabinet-approved plan that uses an alias hides paving a controversial extra road and strongly suggests that the NDP was not paving the Renfrew Road when they were paving right in front of a Cabinet Minister's home?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, like I said, I just am completely disappointed in the member opposite and his approach to these kinds of questions, and I think it's, you know, sad and reprehensible. You know, the reality is, Mr. Speaker, we set out a public road paving plan for everyone to see. So he's had it for months now to look at it, Mr. Speaker. It's based on, as I've said, on engineering standards. It's based on the usage of those roads. It's based on questions like the economic considerations. Mr. Speaker, he can go out and ask the people on that road whether or not they think the road needed to be double chip sealed, and I'm sure he will find out. He will find out that had to be done, Mr. Speaker. We don't do it the way that they did it, Mr. Speaker, which of course it was a mystery, really, Mr. Speaker. We do it through a public process so that people can know when they can expect to get their road paved.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Mr. Speaker, this is about integrity of government, and so difficult questions have to be asked and answered, not deflected. And if someone pulled the wool over the Premier's eyes or one of his ministers to get something done, this House needs to know exactly what happened, Mr. Speaker. So will the Premier commit immediately to release all records of meetings in the government that had anything to do with paving the Renfrew Road to help get to the bottom of this sticky, dark mess?
Honourable the Premier.
You know, Mr. Speaker, it makes you wonder what went on in past governments. Were they really sitting down having some kind of meetings over a piece of pavement somewhere? It's hard to believe, Mr. Speaker, that that's what went on. Maybe it did. I don't know. Mr. Speaker, you know, in the past, when I was in opposition, I took a real interest in what was going on around the province, and I went out to that road, and I went right down to the very end of it, Mr. Speaker, and I know exactly what it looks like, Mr. Speaker, and I met with the residents down there, and they told me how difficult that was for the operation of the school buses that went on it, the fact that they had people down there who were building new homes, and they asked the former government on many occasions to take note of the difficulties that they were having. The member and the minister, of course, made those representations to the former government as well, Mr. Speaker, as is completely appropriate, and that is why it was included in the 5-year public road paving plan for everyone to see.
The Honourable Member from Hants West on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier trumpeted a 5-year pavement plan and claimed that it would help get politics out of paving. Yet in the first year of the plan, what was one of their highest priority roads to be paved? 1.2-kilometre stretch of the Renfrew Road, running right through the heart of the lands owned by the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations and his family, Mr. Speaker. How can the public have confidence in the NDP government's actions when the only family they stood up for was the minister's, using money paid by every other family in Nova Scotia?
Honourable the Premier.
That's why he was only one of three. Well, Mr. Speaker, first of all, it's the second year of the road paving plan. That's the first thing. Secondly, Mr. Speaker, we pave roads in that member's constituency just as we pave roads. And I don't know. Perhaps we paved the road that goes right by his house, Mr. Speaker. I don't know, because I don't keep track where everybody lives, Mr. Speaker. We pave the roads that need to be paved.
The Honourable Member from Glace Bay.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And once again, how about those Maple Leafs? How about those flyers? Mr. Speaker, this government campaigned on changing the province for the better. But today, out-of-work Nova Scotians aren't feeling much change. Unemployment is still unacceptably high in the province and only gets worse as you go outside of Halifax. People are leaving the workforce and looking elsewhere for jobs, especially in southwest Nova, northern Nova Scotia, and in my home of Cape Breton. Mr. Speaker, the NDP's approach to economic development has failed so far. My question to the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism. Why does his government insist on continuing with the same failed economic policies of the past?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we've launched the Jobs Here initiative. And under the Jobs Here initiative, we've seen growth in jobs in the province of Nova Scotia. You know, Mr. Speaker, in the world of economics, in the world of jobs, sometimes companies close for reasons that are beyond any one individual's control. We've created jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, and you know what? We've got a plan. For the first time that the province of Nova Scotia has a plan how to move this province forward when it comes to jobs. Mr. Speaker, talk about jobs. Let's not forget about ships here, Mr. Speaker. Let's not forget about at the peak that contract will hire over 11,000 new jobs for the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And we certainly do recognize the impact that the Irving Shipbuilding Project will have. And we do thank Irving for all their efforts in making that happen.
Yes, sir!
Mr. Speaker, the reality is we still are uncompetitive as a province. Wages are amongst the lowest in the country. Our unemployment rate is consistently one of the highest in the country. We have some of the highest taxes in the country and some of the lowest rates of growth. Yet the minister fails to address any of these issues. He is simply more interested in marketing and rebranding the failures of his government's first 2 years in power. Mr. Speaker, why is the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism more interested in catchy slogans than in making the province more competitive and prosperous?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, Mr. Speaker, I could take some time to talk about what this government has done in just 2.5 years. After falling on the heels of a government that has been inactive for 20 years, Mr. Speaker, I can talk about the PIP program, the Productivity Investment Program, Mr. Speaker. I can talk about the old IEF, which is now called the Nova Scotia Jobs Fund, and the opportunities. Mr. Speaker, I can talk about the incentives that this government has in its toolbox for jobs in the province of Nova Scotia through payroll rebates and such as that. Mr. Speaker, I can talk about how the credit union loan program, how it's helping to create jobs in the province of Nova Scotia, where we increase the ceiling to that to $500,000 and increased it to a 10-year period, Mr. Speaker, as far as payback goes. Mr. Speaker, we are doing things. We are doing things, and the good people of Nova Scotia recognize that, and I hear that everywhere as I travel in this province, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I invite the Minister to come to Glace Bay and ask the people of Glace Bay as people leave continuously. If you want to find them, they'll be in Alberta, Mr. Speaker. What this province needs is to change the way we do business in terms of economic development. Nova Scotia suffers from an uncompetitive tax structure which has been made worse by this government. They've hiked the HST and refused to index income tax. The NDP continues to charge a tax on tax at the pumps, which even the Premier called an immoral tax when he was in opposition. Now is the time for us to get the politics out of economic development, but the minister simply chose to slap snazzy new logos on an old slush fund. Mr. Speaker, when will this minister act to make necessary changes, ensure that Nova Scotian businesses are competitive, and end the slush fund politics?
Good. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, I listened pretty intently to that, and I say my response is, Mr. Speaker, well, maybe that member should go down to Shelburne Shipyard and tell them the same thing. Maybe that member should go to Yarmouth and go to Terrio and Sun and Matagan River and tell them that same thing. Maybe they should go to Seaforth Enterprises and tell them the same thing, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has funded and cooperated with companies and individuals from one region of the province to the other. Mr. Speaker, in 2.5 years, we have a proven track record, Mr. Speaker, and we will continue. We will continue to do what's right for the province of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Premier. Sadly, serious questions have now been raised about a cabinet minister and paving work in front of his home. The Premier has spoken about taking politics out of paving and bringing forward his 5-year plan. The chip sealing work on a Renfrew Road in East Hants used provincial government equipment and provincial government workers to double chip seal a stretch where about 90% of the frontage, Mr. Speaker, is owned by the Minister of Service, Nova Scotia Municipal Relations, and members of his family. Mr. Speaker, can the Premier state that when this matter came before Cabinet, what steps did he take? What leadership did he exercise to make sure the minister declared his conflict? What steps did he...
Thanks, boys. The Honourable Member for Hants West has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What leadership did he exercise to make sure the minister declared his conflict of interest and removed himself from discussions and decisions involving the 5-year paving plan?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, he's right about one thing, and that's that it's sad, Mr. Speaker. The reality is that the five-year paving plan was put forward by the Minister of Infrastructure, Transportation Infrastructure Renewal, Mr. Speaker, based on, as I said, on engineering standards. And the purpose of the member's question is to, by innuendo, slander another member of this House, and I think it's reprehensible. Yay!
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this is a very sad moment indeed, because you would think the NDP government would want to say very clearly that the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations had removed himself from all discussions involving matters which he had a personal interest. The Premier knows full well, Mr. Speaker, that the government he leads can choose to provide that assurance to Nova Scotians. The assurance as to whether decisions were made in a proper and ethical manner, Mr. Speaker. So I ask the Premier, will he undertake to explain all steps that were taken to keep the Minister of Service Nova Scotia Municipal Relations from participating in discussions about roadwork in which he had a personal interest?
Honourable the Premier.
Again, Mr. Speaker, it is amazing. I'd love to have known what went on in the former government, that they had members of their ministers sitting around talking about paving in their own ridings, Mr. Speaker. Maybe it's just, you know, so unbelievable. We can't imagine that they would be wasting their time that way, Mr. Speaker. Of course, Mr. Speaker, the minister brings forward his road paving plan, Mr. Speaker, as was presented here in the House.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier knows that his minister was willing in 2008 in trying to stack a petition against his road. He also knew the minister in his personal capacity had opposed the cost-shared full paving job of that road. The Premier knew the minister was experiencing political trouble for blocking the wishes of his constituents. Mr. Speaker, is the Premier now saying that no one was paying attention to see if the Minister of Service Nova Scotia was trying to get out of political trouble with his neighbours by getting the Monta Vista Road and his own road paved?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, first of all, we have a lot of challenges for the government dealing with the economy that was, of course, so endangered by the actions of the former government, Mr. Speaker. But Mr. Speaker, for the details on the five-year road improvement plan, I'm going to ask the Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal to explain it to the member opposite.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation Infrastructure Renewal.
To the member opposite and previous members of the other administration, if you think this government sits at cabinet meetings and goes through road by road, you're from another planet. We have many things to decide. We have many questions to decide. I want you to know, Mr. Speaker, I meet with staff, we look at the priorities, we publish it in the five-year road plan, and when you see it, he saw it.
Order. Order, please. Order, please. I went through this in the last sitting in the House using the word you. I would remind all members of the House of Assembly to please refrain from using the word you in the House of Assembly. I will now recognize the Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think we're all from another planet in here. Mr. Speaker, my question's for the Minister of Education. Students and parents in Weymouth are trying to save their school. Despite having 250 students and a growing community, this school has been recommended for closure. Parents and students of Weymouth Elementary want to know why their school has been slated to close. So can the Minister of Education explain why Weymouth is at risk of losing their school?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and thank you very much for the question, because I think there might be a little bit of misunderstanding. When a school is identified by a school board for review, that does not necessarily mean that it's slated for closure. There's a very robust process that everyone in this House and the province work towards to make sure that the review process is fair and is open, and that the students and the parents will be able to participate in that review with the school board. There's very clear regulations assigned to that, so I just want to clarify that if their school is up for review, then there's a very clear process and they can be involved in that process. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on his first supplementary.
I wish the Minister would be in Weymouth tonight when all the people gather there at the school and could say that to him, and maybe I'll get that word to him, but they believe on March the 12th of 2012 that school is going to be closed, and the school board is saying that. Mr. Speaker, parents in Weymouth believe the board is making a big mistake also. The board would have to build 8 new classrooms at St. Mary's Bay and would only save $120,000 in administration costs and would put 4- and 5-year-olds in schools with 17- and 18-year-olds, which is a big concern in that community. Will the Minister of Education review the recommendation and make sure that the board is making the best decision for the children and parents of Weymouth School?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The school board has a mandate, and that is to make sure that rules and regulations, procedures are followed. The minister does not get involved in any of the decisions around that. We just make sure that the process is followed appropriately. In terms of the message to people in that area, that they have a role to play in being able to articulate their concerns to the school board, and the school boards have a role to play in making sure that they make the very best decisions on behalf of their students and their school board. I understand that school review processes are very stressful, but I also want to also say that parents and families have a part to play in making these decisions. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Digby Annapolis on his final supplementary.
They believe the Minister is involved. They believe the Minister of Finance is involved, because they're asked to make cuts to that school, and they're going to close one down if they can save $120,000 a year. A measly $120,000 a year. This is what this school board is going to try to save, to gather up a few pennies for these budget cuts, and that's what they're after. Mr. Speaker, the parents of Weymouth Elementary School are meeting tonight to discuss the future of their school. They wished I was there, but I did send a statement, and I will send the answer that you're going to give me in a moment, Madam Minister. Can they count on the Minister of Education to stand up for the children of Weymouth Elementary School for the sake of a mere $120,000 to be saved by that board?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Education supports the school boards in the decisions that they make, and the decisions they make are definitely made within the best interest of all students in their school board. So I support the board as they go through this process, and I support the parents and the families as they articulate their concerns to the board, and this board, I trust the board will make the appropriate decisions around this. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, on August the 8th, the Minister of Community Services announced changes to the special needs regulations under the Employment Support Income Assistance Act. This meant changes for clients accessing essential items to alleviate pain and suffering. Disabilities groups and anti-poverty advocates came together to denounce these changes. Mr. Speaker, can the Minister of Community Services tell the House with whom did she consult in advance of this announcement to ensure this policy would not have a negative impact on Nova Scotia's most vulnerable?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the Honourable Member for her question. Firstly, I want to get the facts out there that are correct facts. It is not a change in a policy that has affected all Nova Scotians with disabilities who receive IA. It was a clarity in the language that was going to the appeal board. which they requested clarity on what the definition of special needs means, and it affected 25 individuals over a 10-year period, and was actually a request from those individuals that were not in our policy in the first place. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, on August 17th, in an interview with CBC Radio, the Minister chastised Dalhousie Legal Aid for spreading misinformation and fear-mongering about these policy changes. Interestingly, Dal Legal Aid and Nova Scotia Legal Aid were to appear before the Community Services Committee this morning, along with the Department of Community Services, the latter at the insistence of the Department and NDP committee members. They all cancelled their appearances yesterday. Mr. Speaker, this begs the question, has the Minister of Community Services placed a gag order on these organizations?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Mr. Speaker, I think that's a little bit of a funny question because of the fact is, who puts a gag order on legal Dalhousie Legal Aid, Nova Scotia Legal Aid. What we have done, because we are a government that works with the people of Nova Scotia, we have invited them in because they've had some concerns. We want to make sure they understand all the facts and what is taking place, and we're hearing their side. I think that's what you call good government. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If what the Minister says is true, why didn't they show up? They didn't show up for a reason. Mr. Speaker, while we were very disappointed the two legal aid societies cancelled their appearance before the committee, we were especially surprised when the Department of Community Service cancelled its appearance too. Mr. Speaker, can the Minister please explain to this House how her department pulled out of a House committee appearance with almost no notice, even after its presentation had been sent to committee members? Could it be, Mr. Speaker, that the Department of Community Services only planned on appearing before the committee to counter what was being said by the legal aid societies?
The Honourable Minister of Community Services.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I find it very odd that anyone would be chastising you as a government and as a minister that is working with the people of Nova Scotia. And that's what we've done with Nova Scotia Legal Aid and Dalhousie Legal Aid. We have been talking to them. Instead of ignoring them, we have been talking to them, and we said, there's a lot of misinformation out there, a lot of miscommunication. So what we need to do is come together as a team and let's work together for a solution for the people of Nova Scotia instead of fighting against each other. I think that's a very good thing, and we should be congratulated for that.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Mr. Speaker, the August tourism stats came out last week and they were very discouraging. They show that between January and August of this year, room nights sold in Yarmouth dropped 8% over the last year. The South Shore and Eastern Shore both saw a drop of 5%, and Cape Breton, the number one island in North America, declined by 3%. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister is, will the Minister concede that under his leadership, tourism stats are moving in the wrong direction? Will he admit that he has failed the tourism industry in Nova Scotia and is presiding a slow death of family businesses in this province?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to rise in my place and talk about tourism in the province of Nova Scotia. As we all know, tourism is an important economic driver for the province of Nova Scotia. And you know, Mr. Speaker, tourism is down right across Canada. But on a good note, Mr. Speaker, that the Germany air flights are up, our cruise ship visitations are up. Those are all good things, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, our U.S. tourism has continued with a downward trend, which has been that way for the last number of years, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we just announced a new operating agency for tourism, and we're expecting big things from that agency and for the future of tourism in the province of Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this time last year, the Minister was questioned about tourism stats, and he said, and I quote, "The Honourable Member talks about me not listening. Well, I wish he listened because we have thought outside the box. I will table that." Mr. Speaker, tourism numbers are plummeting across the province, and this government has no plan to fix it. And it shows no indication they intend to fix it. Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister is, he tried thinking outside the box last year, and that has failed. What's the Minister's plan to increase tourism and get this failing industry back on track?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Well, you know what, Mr. Speaker, we did think outside of the box. I think I can remember kicking off a commercial last year, which I received some negative publicity about, but I think that kickoff was well received by all Nova Scotians and all those outside of the region that viewed it. Mr. Speaker, we've got great things in mind with the new operating special agency when it comes to tourism. One of the things that we are doing, Mr. Speaker, through that agency, we are going to start a consultation process through that agency with all the key stakeholders in the area of tourism, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we all know Nova Scotia is a great place to vacation. What we have to convince people, we got to do more in the way of advertising, more in the way of a lot of things, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we are going to get there. Things have changed in the world. People do not travel as much today as they did 10 years ago. That's an obvious fact, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on his final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Minister cut funding to the Yarmouth Ferry, destroying the economy of the South Shore. He launched an expensive, self-serving tourism ad campaign, yet tourism numbers are down. The government raised the HST. It's driving up power rates and killing small, locally owned business. My question, Mr. Speaker, will he admit that he has no plan to turn the tourism industry around and put life back into rural Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Mr. Speaker, we do have a plan. We've had a plan. When we came into government, Mr. Speaker, we noticed right away. It was obvious to us, Mr. Speaker, that previous governments sat idly by and allowed things to happen. Well, Mr. Speaker, we recognized that right away, and we put together some initiatives, and we are still doing that, Mr. Speaker. I've already mentioned.
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to minister has ended. I will now recognize the Honourable Government House Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, could you please call public bills for second reading?
Public bills for second reading.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, could you please call Bill 65, the Nova Scotia Jobs Fund Act?
Bill 65, the Nova Scotia Jobs Fund Act. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that Bill 65, also known as the Nova Scotia Jobs